Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-98.
This is 1360 AM.
WNJC. Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCradio.com.
All right.
This is 1360 AM.
Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCradio.com.
All right, welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening.
All right, good evening and welcome to Practice Preparedness. As usual, I am your host, Will Hemingway, coming to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNJC 1360. It is a frozen winter wonderland out there. If you are within the local listening area of the radio station at, in South Jersey, Philadelphia area, and if not, good for you, because unless, of course, that is that you are up in Boston, because it's going to be pretty brutal. And they got what we were supposed to get, so it's going to get interesting. So today I want to talk about what I want to talk about is preparedness in the broad sense, but antithesis of this is looking at today, looking at yesterday, looking at what people did. Now, my son, who's gotten really good at this over the past few years, has gotten really, detail-oriented to noticing the preparedness and survival parts and components of what he sees when he goes out. And he was in Walmart the other day and called to give me a report, and ostensibly what he found was pretty funny, actually. We always talk about, if you've heard me talk about this before, during times of weather crises and disasters and threats thereof, that people run out to buy, they run out and buy bread, eggs, and milk. It's silly, because most of these people, as I talk about quite regularly, call their partner on the phone on their way home from work and ask them what they want when they're going to stop for dinner at Wawa or the pizza shop or stop at Whole Foods. Most people have gotten away from what we traditionally did, which was to have the family dinner, and someone in the family would cook dinner, and you would sit around and have a real home-cooked meal, you know, when people weren't having massive hypertension because of the 800 pounds of salt that they put in everything and all the other nasty things in the pre-prepared foods that they make, and they actually had a home-cooked meal. They don't do that anymore. So if you can't make toast, if you can't cook a basic meal from scratch, why are you going out and buying eggs, bread, and milk? I'm completely confused. I don't know. Maybe they bought mixes of things that they could make that all require eggs and milk. Maybe, I don't know. But one of the funny things that he picked up on when he was in Walmart yesterday was that the entire aisle, and how scary is that there's an entire aisle basically in Walmart of chips, whether it's potato chips, Doritos, all kinds of chips, that there was not a single bag of chips left on the entire row that had been wiped out. So I guess the new survival food for those who are unprepared and unanointed are potato chips, maybe Doritos. I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it, but I can tell you this. Whatever it is not good. And when people are in panic mode because they are warning on the news and on the radio that you should be prepared because you're about to get snowed in or iced in or some combination thereof, you should be sitting back going, and this is what we've prepared for. We don't have to do anything. We're good to go. That's a time to walk into your pantry or walk into your wherever you store your goodies and pull out a few things, make sure everything's good to go, and you're good. You don't have to panic. That's the beauty of preparedness. This is not about doomsday coming and we're going to hunker down. I met a very nice lady in the Walmart about 4 or 5 days ago. And she was telling me how panicked she was that because Donald Trump was elected, the world was going to come to an end. We were going to have nuclear war next week. And that she needed to learn how to build a bunker and how to do preparedness things so that she could survive when total anarchy occurred after nuclear war. This is not what we were talking about, because none of those things are going to happen. And even on the completely 0.00000001% of possibility in possibility that anything even moderately of that level would occur, if you are prepared every day, if you live a lifestyle that is wrapped around being prepared, having skills, being self-reliant, every one of those things, including the worst, will be ready for, as ready as a human being can get. There's some things that no one can ever prepare for, but having skills and having the ability to take care of yourself will trump all of those things, no pun intended, trump all of those things that otherwise, you would be running around in circles. Next week, if everything goes right, my friend Jim and his wife will be calling in, and we're going to talk about how even when you are prepared, that when things happen to you, like a major injury, that a lot of times, even when you are skilled, highly skilled in taking care of others or in handling some disaster, EMS, nursing, whatever, that when you are the one who gets injured, a lot of times people will completely go blank and be left in a position where they are in trouble. And it takes time, sometimes when you don't have time, to bounce back, to get your wits about you and move on using what you know. This is why we practice. This is why fire companies practice and do drills every month where they go through the motions of what they do so that people can critique and teach and bolster their skill sets in order to get their mind in the right place. That's what preparedness is about. It does not matter whether you're talking about getting your computer system ready in case you are in a position where there's, say, a hacking attack or a power outage. When we came into the radio station tonight, the computers were all mucked up because the power had probably gone out, and as a result, some of the things were not working properly. It took some time to get ready. But when you have the knowledge of what to do, then that's just a task that's laid before you, not a crisis. And that's really the key, because if you are not in that position and you have no skills and you've never prepared, you've never run scenarios in your mind, then you're in trouble. So I want to talk tonight about what it means to be prepared. Again, this is obviously a recurring topic because people come and go that listen. Also, people who listen have missed things. So I wanted to go into some basic thought process of what makes people ready, what allows people to be in the position where they are, where they can actually be ready to respond for themselves, for their automatic responses to help themselves survive whatever challenge comes their way. And that really begins with having a survival mindset. That is really critical because it's all in your mind. What is in your mind is what makes you survive. What you have to go to a book to read is not going to do diddly's worth of good to you because it's going to be too late. So when you are paying attention to your environment around you and not off in la la land, you know when things are coming, it will bring to mind thoughts about what it would take to survive those things. Like in this instance, we have encountered a major snow ice storm, and we're in a position where we're being challenged by the inability to get around. There's a state of emergency. There's a limit on people being allowed to go out on the road unless you're essential personnel. This is in order to lighten the load on the emergency services. If you were a fireman, or if one of your family members were a fireman or a rescue squad, whatever, you would get pretty aggravated if people who had no skills, who drove vehicles that were not designed to run in any challenging situations, were out going around to try to just go to the store or go wherever, it would be silly. So in order to do that, in order to make sure that the average company who is afraid to say, okay, we're going to shut down because they'll get a negative backlash, the state or a county sometimes will declare a state of emergency. This gives them the safety net to say, guess what? That gives us a reason that we're going to tell you, don't come to work. We're not essential. People don't have to go to the mall. People don't have to go see the movies at the movie theater. So the movie theater is shut down because there's a state of emergency. This is why when people who do practice preparedness say to me, oh, well, how stupid, they made a state of emergency, it's not so bad. Well, because it has a lot to do with way more than whether you think you can safely go outside. This is for the general populace who will feel the onus of responsibility to show up to Victoria's Secrets to go to work there to sell underwear when people are going to crash and die on the road to get there and nobody's going to show up anyway. But if nobody said, don't go out, we told you we're the government, they're going to end up making you go out. That's what's going to happen. So there are some realistic backgrounds to some of these things that everyone thinks are so stupid. When you go to develop a survival mindset, the single most critical thing that a person needs in order to survive a serious challenge or threat is that mindset. Most people start with things like weapons, food, and gear. The fact is that without a true survival mindset will be absolutely worthless. Someone else will have to come save you. History has proven over and over, even in instances where people had the odds in their favor, that their perception caused them to lose faith and inevitably lose the will to live. That's what happens. People die even when on the other side of the wall, 15 feet away, there was freedom because they can't see it. And that is how life is. People who were surrounded by months of food rations and could not get themselves to eat because they were so sick of peanut butter, etc. A proper survival mindset is much more than just a will to live, though. It's about the confidence that you have built and practiced, that you have learned enough skills, that you have developed a level of wisdom that will allow you to overcome many challenges without depending upon others. Wisdom that allows you to remain calm while those around you are losing their heads. The key to your survival is the mastery of skills and the wisdom to understand the application of gear, supplies, physical and mental effort. So when we're looking at what we're being challenged with today, then you know that if you have those skills and tools in the background, that a thing like today, like the snow and the ice, is just another day. That's what happens. Jim, we have you with us?
Hi, Will. How are you doing
today? Alrighty. How are you today?
A little tired. I've been up most of the night, but actually up all night until about 3:30 this afternoon.
Wow. So how are things in the weather up in Bucks County area?
They're pretty good now. I see a little bit of skies. Yeah, there's still some clouds left, but you know, now what we're preparing for is the refreeze, because it's supposed to get clear, which means that it is going to get super cold. So everything's going to refreeze. It's going to hit that, you know, single digit mark.
Oh, is it really?
The wind chill is going to reach single digits. So they're saying when that happens, basically, salt doesn't work so well.
Right. So that's why they've been using some of those brining solutions that are mixed with other melt that'll go down to zero, right?
Yeah. So the when you spray the salt with the brine,
mm-hmm.
it helps to activate it. They're also finding that things like beet juice works down in very low temperatures.
Really?
In place of salt, yes.
Wow. Learn a new thing every day.
Yeah, there's all kind of little goodies that are stored that, you know, you can never really use. Not
right.
That I'd ever have enough beet juice anywhere that I could actually use it around my house.
Yeah.
Or that my wife would let me, because it would turn the carpets purple.
My God, could you imagine? But it is kind of funny, isn't it? That there are these things that, as we look, and the beet juice, does that supposedly work lower temperatures then?
Yeah, it works at much lower temperatures.
Wow, interesting. So, well, that's, you know, that's pretty funny, because, as you know, there's always a new thing over the horizon. So we've got the ice and the massive weight on the trees that has been dropping trees all over the place. And as you know, that really becomes another big part of the challenge, is then we're looking at power outages and blocked highways and all kinds of other things that go along with that.
Yeah, we were actually pretty fortunate. We early on were expecting, you know, power outages and associated problems with the wind, and we didn't really see much of that.
Mm-hmm.
All night I was keeping an eye on the PICO outage websites.
Yeah.
And we did not have any that lost power.
Wow.
During the entire storm. PICO had 3,000, but none of them were, you know, any of my responsibility.
Right. Well, that's, and so as I looked around, I noticed that basically there were a few people out. There was nobody on the main roads. It was empty. I was a little surprised. I was not surprised at all to see people out in Priuses running around, which are, you and I both know, are so well designed for running in bad weather and off-road conditions. It's really funny. Where were they going? Everything's closed. There's nothing open. I didn't see anything of significance that was open on the way over to the radio station today.
Yeah, we had trouble actually finding some places to eat. You know, the good old standby Wawa was certainly open. And I'll tell you, the The soup was definitely a welcome treat in the middle of the night. Then Denny's.
Denny's isn't a place to eat.
Yeah, you know what? So, when you're hungry, you'll eat pretty much anything.
Yes, so we know. But I still think that when I made rat in South America, that it was tastier than the skillet that I got at Denny's the last time I went.
Yeah, cardboard doesn't taste so good.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me, not to go off on a tangent, but, you know, I'm always amused by the ads they have for the Harvest Right freeze dryer, where in the background, when they show them eating the food, that they have a different disaster depicted in the background, fire outside or water. The one I saw today had icebergs and such. But, you know, when you think about using a lot of these pre-made food supplies like Wise and Mountain House and others, and then, of course, the old standbys that all the preppers who've never actually done anything to survive a real incident by the MREs, and then when you open the first one, you wish that you had never seen one again ever in your life. And
yeah.
You know, it struck me that the last time that I went to Olive Garden, that it had a similarity to it. Because Olive Garden and a lot of these other chains, they have all their food made in a factory, and then they bring it in these bags, frozen, and they put them in a double boiler.
Yep.
To reconstitute them. And you can certainly see, and it really brings, not to bash them, well, I don't mind bashing them, but not to bash them, but the thing is that places like Red Lobster and Olive Garden and others who use these pre-made foods, things like Applebee's and whatnot, you can taste in the food the extremely high levels of sodium and other preservatives that make it have less tenderness to the meat, the less tenderness and less flavorful, but these overwhelming salt levels that will make my blood pressure spike through the ceiling. And it really goes to the bigger problem for people who are involved in preparedness, which is that they're buying these foods that are prepared and either freeze-dried or dehydrated, jerky and things like that, that are so high off of the chart. Then you add that when you're actually going to use these things in a survival or preparedness situation, that you're under stress, that it's not normal, so you're under a higher level of stress. You may be under more physical duress than you normally are, and now you've added high sodium into it that brings you in threat of having a heart attack or a stroke. And people don't really know that that's something you really have to watch out for when you're putting away your food stocks. People buy canned food, real canned food, in a metal can. It has BPA lining. It has all of these things that will increase your blood pressure, make all kinds of other illnesses, and put you at risk while you're already at risk because you're under a stress situation.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the important thing is, again, as you were talking about earlier, is putting your plan together for everyday real incidences. You know, actually trying some of the different things that you have, you know, making sure that the food that you're eating you like, that it's not really high in certain things, you know, that's going to do harm to you. And, you know, in the case especially of MREs, you know, they really bind you up pretty well.
Yeah, that's a whole nother part that most people don't know. You need Dulcolax with you when you're going to eat MREs, because like eating powdered concrete.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the whole thing, is that people need to try their plan, practice their plan. You know, and just as we're dealing with here, this could be the same storm that dumped, you know, almost 24 inches of snow in places. in my area dumped about 7 inches of rain, sleet, hail, snow.
Mm-hmm.
And in other places, like down along the coast, they're literally flooded out.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing, is that, you know, it's not just one. You can't say, oh, I'm worried about winter storms.
Right.
They, you know, when you put your plan together to make your family enjoy an experience instead of freezing at home, you know, they're able to eat foods that they like, they enjoy, that aren't going to make them sick, that help with their stress levels. You know, and that's really where the pieces come in, why it takes a little bit of practice to get there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and that's an interesting point that we don't talk about that often, which is, now you're in a situation where you have food, you have shelter, you have water and whatever else for that side of it. So you're good there. Now what are you going to do when the power stayed on, but the cable goes down? Which mine
was... Oh, not the cartoons.
the thing is that, like, mine was going in and out all day. And I thought to myself, well, that's going to really rot if I can't have my internet, because I've got things that I have to do online, you know, work that I'm doing online remotely. I was in a server and whatnot. And all that comes to a screeching halt. Now, I have enough things that I could switch gears and keep going, and I wouldn't be bored. But there are a lot of people who, when they can't get their phone to work, somebody I know a few weeks back, I guess a month or so ago, was whining to me because he had broken his phone. And then I was in one of my clients over in Philly, and she had a problem with her phone, and she couldn't text and she couldn't do Facebook. First of all, she was at work. That was a whole nother conversation, but you might have thought the world had come to an end, because she was agitated. He was really agitated because his whole world had stopped, because his entire world, even in his 40s, has morphed into this. He doesn't have friends in person. He has friends on Facebook. Not that they're really friends, but okay. That's another argument too in itself. But, you know, the bottom line is, look at how dependent people have become on those things. You remember, you go with the scouts. We used to do things with, you know, you play cards, you do this, you play horseshoes, you do whatever. You're inside and it's freezing outside. There are lots of things you can do. We used to play Monopoly, and people would nearly axe murder each other over claims of cheating and whatnot, or just being angry that they had all the hotels. But people
Monopoly, Clue, Jenga.
Right, but people don't do that now. I mean, I'll go out on a limb and say maybe 25% of people do that. And the rest of them completely have no idea. If you took their phone away, I was telling someone the other day while I was in Walmart, he was a really nice guy, very low tech. And I think probably part of it may have been because of how expensive it is. But I was struck that if I had had 2 hours with him, I could have taught him how to set his phone up so he didn't even need the internet. He could have things on his phone so he could use them and be able to do things because he doesn't have a computer that you would normally do on a computer on his phone. There are so many opportunities, but the minute you unplug people from the grid, they lose their mind now. It's stunning. And they get irritated and difficult to deal with, and now you have them in your household. When you're making a preparedness plan, part of that, and that's why I opened the show by saying preparedness is about a way of life. it's not about an incident. It's not about running out and getting candles and whatnot. It's about a way of life, because it changes the way you live in a positive way. When you disconnect from being part of the matrix, so to speak, I hate using that term, but it's easy. Most people recognize, you know, you're actually able to self-subsist. And that comes in many, many forms, whether it's making your own food, having your own food, being able to take care of yourself and not go, oh, holy crap, I've got nothing in the freezer, nothing in the refrigerator. Now what do I do? To saying, okay, so the cable went down. We still have lights. We're good. And being able to do something to keep your mind active and be interested. I mean, hell, I said to him, well, you have a DVD player, right? Yeah. Do you have DVDs? Oh, yeah, I got a ton of them. Mm-hmm. So why not watch a movie? Oh. Yeah, like what?
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, because of the age of technology that we're in, is really becoming a lost art.
Yeah.
You know, I'll use a good example. Right now, I have the boys out, and, you know, they're sledding, and they hopefully not going to die on the jump that they're about to do. And this hill used to be packed with kids.
Mm-hmm.
The instant the snow stopped.
Yep.
And there's hardly any footprints on here. Right now, I'm looking at a hill. It's, you know, used to handle 100 kids, and there's five.
Wow. How sad is that? So,
it is. People don't do those kind of things anymore. And not only are they not getting a good experience, but they're not enjoying themselves as much. You know, Facebook is, it's a communications method for some people, but, you know, what is a good communications?
Right.
And I would say most of the time not. It's gossip. It's not healthy and hearty.
Right. And, you know, that's a real, I'm really glad that you pointed that out, because, you know, that sledding thing is a symptom to the larger point, which is that people just don't do things anymore. So when, you know, when that's the situation, somebody's trying to beep in, hopefully they'll call back. If you're listening, anybody else listening and trying to call in on this, you can use one of the other numbers, 856-227-1360, 856-232-7078, or 77. I don't know. Which one did you come in on, Jim?
1360.
Okay, so if anybody else wants to get in on it, it's use the 856-232-7077 or 7078. So back to the point is that you're right. And look at what we got out of that. We got camaraderie. We got competitive sportsmanship out of it, because no kid ever went down the hill on a sled who didn't say, I was faster. Did you see how high I jumped? Did you see how far I went? Did you see, oh man, he cracked, you know, all those things. And then what do? You pick up the sled and you have to go where? Back up the hill. There's no rope tow to pull you to the top, so you're going to trudge your way up. Two or three of them, and you've gotten a good workout in the day. All of those things are gone. All those things
and
are gone.
And it builds ingenuity with the kids as well. I'm actually watching my one son. He just picked up a pool, a kiddie pool that he is dragging up the hill. Which I don't know where he got it from. Uh-huh. And, you know, my other son came over and asked me if I had WD-40 in the truck. You know, and it builds a skill, you know. Kids, you know, when I was young, I built my own sled.
Right.
See, as James is actually doing now. See, now he found a pool. Somebody else's trash is somebody else's treasure.
There you go. Yeah, there's a good slip slide down the hill on that puppy, and you get rubber baby buggy bumpers around it.
You know, it's, and this is the thing, is that good skill really comes from experience. It's not something you can read in a book. It's not something that you can watch somebody else's YouTube videos. Real skill for emergencies, for, you know, longer term disasters, really comes from living that lifestyle like you were talking about.
Yep, and that's what's so great about things like the scouts. You just came back from taking the scouts out on an outing. These things build
character. Very cold outing, yes.
Yeah, they're very cold. You know, it builds skills, but it also builds other things. It builds character because you learn how to persevere. You're out in that cold the other day. That was a cold day to go out and do that. You learn to persevere. You know, no whiners here, because at that point you're actually doing it and you're not in a place where anybody else wants to hear you're whining, because they're not whining, so you're not going to whine either. It builds a level of character in a person. And these things, unfortunately, have been lost largely because they, you know, people have gone away from that. And I think that that's of course the target that I've set forward, because, you know, doing practice preparedness, doing the meetup groups that we do, is because that gives people some means. Now, a lot of times they sit and write and take notes, but this is why we try to do hands-on things, so that people get a feel for what that's about. And they also get to talk to other people who are doing it and realize they're not the only one who couldn't figure out how to light that fire or how to start that Coleman stove or whatever. You know, but again, I mean, it's repetitive in nature, but that's life. If you repeat skills, if you do things, you'll find that jumping the car to get it started teaches you things and practices skills for fixing a problem in the house, or being able to do other things. Like, you know, if you have a Coleman stove and it uses propane and you haven't used it ever, or haven't used it in 5 years, but you used it once and put it away, and you think you're going to pull it out and it's going to work, you're going to probably have a really bad day. I had the lesson, even after all the years that I had done it, and years that I had done it, back in the early 80s, my ex-wife and I went to go to a race in the Poconos at the Pocono Raceway, and I set up, and there was a typhoon that came through. I literally dug a moat around my tent and my car, because people's tents were literally floating away. It's hard pack on the pavement, you know, on the parking lot. And I could not get my propane stove to light, and it was making me crazy. And what I didn't realize was, all my life I had used dual fuel stoves, which means you're burning Curo or white fuel, whatever. And I never had a problem, but I had used a propane stove, put it away the year before, pulled it out, and here I went to light it, and I spent an hour with her in the background telling me how stupid I was that I couldn't get it to work, only getting more and more aggravated, making it more and more difficult to problem solve. And some guy comes up and goes, I've been watching you for an hour trying to get that started. It's a propane stove, isn't it? Uh-huh. And he reaches in his pocket and straightens out a foot and a half long pipe cleaner, slides it up into the tube, pulls it out with a spider and his friends, and says, try now. Pop lit right away. He goes, have a nice day, and walks away. And I just smack myself in the head, like, what an idiot am I? But and I had been a scout, and I had been a scout master, and I had done this a thousand times, but I never used propane. So I didn't know, and boom. And I'll tell you, that was 1982 or whatever, and this is 2017, and I have not forgotten that moment ever, because one thing is for sure, lessons learned when you are completely embarrassed or completely frustrated, you will never forget. And you don't get them from reading or watching a YouTube video. You get that by putting yourself out there and taking the risk. And when you screw up and you learn, you will never screw up ever again. That's how it works. And that's the beauty to being able to do. So now we only got like 2 inches down here. We got a lot of rain and a lot of freezing rain, but we really got very little snow. So the roads are reasonably clear, but it's all wet. So you know tonight it's going to freeze up and over. And this goes to the whole idea of whether you ran out yesterday when everyone else had beat you there and got ice melt and whatnot, it's not going to do you any good because the temps are going to drop so low, it's not going to help anyway. There are other things you can do, like kitty litter and gravel and whatnot, if you're in a position where you get stuck. But this is where you know that sometimes the best part of survival is knowing not to stick your hand in the hole because there might be something that's going to bite it off. So you stay home. That's what you do. So, you know, you're in a position where you can move about and you have plenty of skills and your vehicle is equipped for the proper way. So you've got the kids out. Have you seen many people out in your area?
People are starting to wander a little bit now. Mm-hmm. I will tell you on a couple of the runs that we were out on overnight and very early, the roads were completely clear.
Uh-huh.
You know, and one of the things that the Weather Service has done very successfully is sensationalize the weather, you know, into scaring people, which, you know, is good in one sense, keeps them inside, but on the other sense, you know, it gives them that, next time it's not going to be as bad, we're not really going to listen mentality.
Yeah, that really worries me because, you know, I used to like to turn on the Weather Channel because it was very analytical. Here's the storm, here's the bands, here's what it looks like, here's the NWS forecast, here's what we're seeing on the ground, here's where it's coming from and what they're experiencing. Good. Now you got them out there going, oh, it's so bad, look at me, oh, the water is over my knees. Well, you knew that was going to happen. Why are you standing in the water? Like, it's really troubling because I do worry that Chicken Little situation is going to happen, and then people are going to get themselves in trouble.
Oh, it does. I mean, I have particular areas in my municipality that flood. I don't want to say regular. It's, you know, maybe 2-3 times a year. You know, and sometimes, you know, I'll get the phone call of, hey, you know, the water's starting to rise, or I'll be watching the water gauge from the USGS, and I'll be watching it. I'll be like, wow, that's coming up really quick, you know, and I'll jump in the car, I'll take off, you know, get down there. I'm like, listen, the water's coming up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And, it'll be okay. And before they know it, you know, the cars are underwater. They live in raised houses, but they still keep stuff on the ground floor.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't get their stuff out. It's complacency is not always a good thing.
Yeah, and that, you know, that really speaks to something that's right now is appropriate and applicable to this moment. People in South Jersey who are all breathing a sigh of relief or saying, they over-exaggerated it. When you look at it, and all that happened were the bands moved a little west, and so Boston got it instead, and they're welcome to it, and kind of the eastern side of New York. But, you know, the thing is that there's flooding everywhere, and it's going to be bad because we've had a lot of water come in a very short time. So if you're listening and you live in an area that ever gets even reasonably damp, you should seriously consider moving your vehicles and other important things that you have outside on ground level to a higher level. It's easier to walk a block away to where it's 3 feet higher if you live near the water, if you live in a low-lying area, than it is to come out and find your car underwater. I know lots of people think, And I've heard people actually say, oh, it's awesome, I have insurance, I'll get a new car out of it. Never quite works out that way.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's
just... And that's even if there's a lot of policies that don't cover flood damage in vehicles.
Yeah.
Most homeowners insurance policies don't cover flood insurance in homes.
Yep, yep. And, you know, it kind of dovetails to a point that I wanted to bring up in this conversation, which is that, you know, we're in 2017. You think, okay, well, spring is in 6 days. Would not count on the fact that we won't get another snow before this season is over. But 2017 Atlantic hurricane season starts in 3 months, less than 3 months, June 1st, and runs to November 30th. There's a whole new set of challenges that come with that. You're not freezing, you're swimming. So remember, winds, high winds, and falling trees. As you look out, every situation that you encounter every day should be some means for you to grab some data points toward your overall experiential data to learn how to be prepared. So what do we get from this situation? And you're welcome to chime in your things you're getting there. So what do we have? Downed trees, flooding. So we'll just look at those first. If you have trees that are in low-lying areas on your property and those trees are tall enough that if the wind blows them the right direction, they're going to fall on your house, then you need to look at what you're going to do to keep that from happening. Is it trimming the tree to make it lighter on the top? Is it topping the tree so it can't reach your house? Is it making sure that maybe you do something to allow for better drainage in the area? Because way more trees last few years fell not because they were rotted, but because no matter how big their root system was, the ground was so saturated, it was like trying to hold on to marshmallow.
And there's a lot, you know, there's even the types of trees, you know, pine trees, you know, just they inevitably come down
mm-hmm.
where your harder woods with different things, the roots get deeper. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can look at. But I, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, or maybe 3 weeks ago, I had a tree come down on a house, crushed the top floor of the house, and we wound up condemning the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a tree, it was a huge tree. I bet it was probably there for 80, maybe 85, 90 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the people... it's been there for a long time, never saw any kind of problems and issues. And this is where you really have to look and expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
You know, the many years ago, you know, my grandfather, he built his own house. He went with his hands, dug the ground, put in the brickwork, did the cement work, you know, laid the wooden beams and put all this different stuff together and built a house that will last for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people can do those skills anymore?
Yeah.
You know, we have to reteach them to ourselves, to our kids, and that's what's important, is that we're not just trying to prepare ourselves to live right here, right now, but you know, you're trying to teach your kids that same mentality so as they grow up, they're actually going to become young men and women that grow up to be successful in life, that, you know, have good jobs, but can deal with things as they come up. Critical thinkers.
Right. And you know, that's interesting because that dovetails to something I'm writing about in my book right now is about the chaos theory. And, you know, the chaos theory was originally designed and developed in order to, as part of an overall picture, to do weather prediction. And during that development, they found out that there were other problems with that that meant that they added a new piece to it, which is known as the uncertainty principle, that, quote, prohibits accuracy. And they found out that you could predict chaos, but you could not predict the fact that there was an uncertainty principle. Now, of course, if you want to get really detailed, you get down to it, you find out that there was some factor that you didn't include, so the next time you include that and you get better and better at being able to, being able to predict accurately. But really, quite frankly, what you get is a scenario where there is just unknown, but it's not all unknown. We have experiential data. So we know that there are hurricanes and fires. We know that trees come down. We know that there are earthquakes and tornadoes and high winds and things. So when we know that, we don't need to be able to predict accurately. It's nice that the weather people, when they can get reasonably accurate, so at least we know what's coming. But in the end, we need to be able to have those skills because they cross the boundaries of almost all of those challenges. So it doesn't matter what comes. You could be completely oblivious and not listen to the news and still be ready because you have those skills. And I think you're right. But, there's another thing to be taken from that anecdote that you just gave, which is that when, those people, imagine we'll make those people for the moment preppers. And they said they don't need to go because they're prepared. They can stay in their house, and then you can't.
Yeah, and that's... So we have some of those as well, where I work. And, the water's coming up, and now I'm staying in my house. I have a raised house. Yeah, that's all well and fine, and... they'll get in their kayak or their canoe and make a beer run, and, that's fine when the water's moving fast and there's nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the second that 90-foot tree comes down and slams into the side of the house and shakes the foundation and maybe pushes it off, that really changes perspectives.
Yep. And then what? So this goes back again to what we were saying in the start, is that, this is a lifestyle. So it changes the way you live. So when you store things in your house, if you store them with the thought that if I had an hour to get out and get the most important things and get out, could I? How would I? And when I get done that hour, will I be standing there going, holy crap, I have all that stuff right there and I left it? Or will they say, holy crap, how did you know to bring all that? Well, because I've been preparing for 5 years for the possibility that I might have to do that. And that really is the thing. But, one of the things too, imagine if you're their people in that house and they have things that are irreplaceable, like photos of family members that are long past, or collections of coins or stamps or whatever, and there's no way you're going to have the time to fiddle to get that all ready and get it out of there. And what's your contingency plan? Where are you going to take it to? Unless you've thought about that ahead of time. I've talked to some... Go ahead.
Sorry. So that even takes you to an even more basic principle, Will. What's the most common disaster that people have? Losing their jobs,
mm-hmm.
fires, and some of the most basic stuff. So if you lose your job, you want to have things so you can feed yourself, feed your family, provide for them during that time. Having a fire in your home, having your valuables in a safe.
Yep.
And this is... there's some very fundamental basic principles that you can live by, you can go through, and you can, quote, perfect, but it's about being well-rounded.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not necessarily thinking the world's going to end tomorrow, May it? Yes. But that's not really my big concern.
Mm-hmm.
I look, you know, part of my job, as you well know, is, you know, what are the probabilities of disaster?
Mm-hmm.
What's most likely to occur? You know, you got that box with the four squares in it.
Mm-hmm.
High probability, high consequence. That's the box that, you know, you need to focus on.
Yeah.
You know, the low frequency, high cost box is the one where things typically tend to be really bad because people are not prepared to deal with those things.
Yeah. So
you know, and that's, as people put plans together, you know, how many fires occur in the United States? How many people's homes get flooded in the United States? How many people that lived in an area that had tornadoes, homes get destroyed by tornadoes? And, you know, am I going to say, yeah, I can save everything? No, but by having a fireproof box that's bolted to the ground, the takes care of a lot of those different issues.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole thing. But, of course, that doesn't go fly with the people who want to have that $300 fancy schmancy jewelry box on the table. They want to have it there. They don't want to have it in the thing. But this is part of what you do to adjust the way you live in order to live intelligently. It's kind of like having a 4,000 square foot house when you're only two people or one person. It's idiotic. But they're doing it.
And again, something else, you know, I laugh. You know, we'll go, you know, people, oh, my wedding ring was sitting on top of the, you know, dresser when the house caught fire. And I'm like, you know, they're like, oh, it's a $10,000 ring. Well, if that's the case, why is it sitting on top of the dresser when any thief can come in
absolutely.
And take it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, and there you have it. I mean, this is a matter of a mindset. And that's why we recognize, you and I, that not everybody will ever meet in our game because they don't want, they see it as an affront to their ability to live the way they want to. Well, that's fine. But when you live on the tip of the mountain, or no, better yet, when you make a tree house on the top of a 100-foot tree in a windy area, sooner or later, your tree house is going to be on the ground and you're not going to be in a good place. So it's relative. You have a great view while it's there, but when it falls, life is over. So, you know, that's just a reality. So we're going to have to wrap it up because we're coming up to the end. But I appreciate you calling in to have the conversation with me.
No problem. It's been enjoyable. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. And hopefully we can get you and your lovely wife on next week to talk about the other topic that we're going to.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care now. So in... So in conclusion, somebody's been calling and calling all on that same number. This is why if you're going to call in, you got to call in on one of the other numbers. They don't roll over. So in any event, the bottom line is that preparedness is the key. You live that way. You when you're living that way, you will live better. That's the deal. It's not as extravagant and it's not as fancy of a way of life as that of the people who want to live like they live in a perfect world where nothing will ever touch them. It only happens to other people. But the reality is, no matter who you are, you will always end up in that place. So be safe out there. Get to high ground. Take your things to high ground. And until next week, be safe. We're out of here.
And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio. And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively. Act with purpose every day. Have a plan and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.